Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Bud Bobber. I'm a lawyer in Ogletree's Milwaukee office, and I'm joined by one of my favorite Ogletree Deacons lawyers, Tim Kameen. Tim, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great today, Bud. It's good to see you again.
Thank you so much. So we're going to follow up on a podcast we recently recorded on the topic of how to effectively begin an interview of an employee as part of a workplace investigation. Today we're going to talk about the back end of the interview and leave you with some suggestions and tips for how to most effectively wrap up and conclude the employee interview.
So, but after you've obtained all of the answers to the questions on the substantive issue that you're investigating, what are the steps you want to take to close that out and sort of close the door on the interview?
Well, first of all, you got to be sure that you've used the opportunity of talking with a particular employee to find all of the relevant information that you can. Of course, mainly what you're doing is you're asking that employee what he or she knows on the topic that you're investigating. But don't forget that this person can also lead you to other sources of information. So you actually need a little checklist of follow-up questions. You want to ask the employee if they have any notes about these things that you're talking about. Maybe there's somebody that records notes or sent text messages, but they may not be offering that information unless you ask directly. So you've got to ask the employee if they have any notes. You also want to ask about who else might have relevant information. The employee may know who else witnessed something in the workplace. The employee may know from rumors who's been talking about it. And so you've got to ask the employee, who else do you think knows anything about this topic that I've been asking you about? And they can lead you to other people. Sometimes a really good way to get at that is to ask directly of the employee, have you talked with anyone else about this? Because maybe coworkers have come to this employee and talked about it. And those are people that may know something that you need to know as the investigator.
And I think after you've followed up on those other loose ends as well, it's a great idea to sort of circle back to some of the instructions we talked about for beginning the interview in our last discussion and circle back and ask the employee to verify. You know, when we opened the interview, we asked them to pledge to us that they were going to be truthful. Well, let's circle back at the end of the interview and say, you know, we verified that the answers you've given to me today are truthful. Likewise, that they're complete and that you haven't left anything out. And always give the employee, I think, an opportunity to say, is there anything else at all that's relevant here that you'd like to add, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You never want the employee to be able to say that they weren't asked a particular question, and that's why they didn't tell you something relevant. I think you want to give them that opportunity with a big open-ended question. Is there anything else you want to tell me or anything else you think is relevant to this discussion that we've had? And that really puts it, squarely on the table, and the employee has to decide if they're going to come clean, if they know something else, or if they're going to cover it up and hope they get away with it after they've already assured you that they would give truthful and complete answers and that they have, in fact, given truthful and complete answers. And the other thing you want to do is what lawyers do in taking depositions of witnesses. You want to minimize the chance that the story changes or that there's new information that comes out later. And so you want to be able to have the employee confirm that if they learn of anything else that is relevant to this topic that you've been talking to them about, they'll come back and tell you. We don't want to be surprised later in some proceeding, whether it's a lawsuit or an agency proceeding or a labor arbitration with some new information from the employee. We want to obligate them and get their commitment that they'd come back and talk to us about anything new that they learned later.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think we can also circle back to what we told the employee at the beginning of the interview, which is, if you're truthful with us, you know, you'll not experience any retaliation, and that we won't tolerate anyone else retaliating against you or having any backlash against you for your participation in our investigation. So please let us know if you experience any kind of hostility, backlash from anyone else. And also advise the employee that, you know, now that you're aware that we're conducting an investigation and what it's about, you are also not to retaliate or, you know, give any sort of hostility towards someone for, you know, they may be able to identify who's made a complaint or who's given information to the company, and to make sure that the employee we're interviewing understands that we expect them to refrain from retaliating or harassing anybody who's given information to the company.
And Tim, in the last year or so, the law has changed in terms of an employer's ability to require an employee to keep confidential the information in the investigation. And I know the labor board has changed rulings on that that would apply to non-supervisory employees, even in workplaces where there isn't a union. Can you give us a summary of where the law stands in that regard and what you think are the best practices that you advise your clients on?
Yeah, with regard to, again, we're talking about non-supervisory, non-management employees that we may be interviewing who are covered by the National Labor Relations Act. And the NLRB has taken the stance that these rank and file employees have a protected right to discuss disciplinary action or disciplinary investigations with their coworkers, with outside parties such as union representatives or counsel. What the NLRB really sort of attacked was in the Banner Health case was an employer script for employee interviews in which they had a canned statement that instructed the employee to keep the contents of the interview strictly confidential. And the board held that this interferes with the employee's right to discuss disciplinary issues and disciplinary investigations with their coworkers. And so what we learned is that, you know, it's probably the wrong thing to have a blanket policy that we're going to instruct employees to keep the contents of an investigation confidential. Now, aside from the attorney-client privilege issues that we've talked about if counsel is involved, but to let them know, you know, that, you know, we are going to expect you to keep it confidential only in those cases where we have some real objective concerns, such as where we've learned that a individual who is accused of misconduct has made a threat of violence or other retaliation against people. And we know that witnesses have a reason to be concerned. And we have a reason to be concerned that if we disclose the nature of the complaint or the witnesses against the person, that they may suffer some sort of adverse consequences. That we have reason to believe that there's evidence that could be destroyed, and we have reason to believe there's somebody who will destroy evidence, that there's a risk of witnesses getting together and coordinating their stories to fabricate false stories, that we are aware there's an effort to make a cover-up, so to speak, and that we need to prevent that by isolating witnesses and preventing them from talking to each other or any other comparable serious threats. And in cases where we have a specific concern, rather than the general concern of good practices of protecting an investigation, but a specific concern of something special about this case and this circumstance and these individuals who are involved, in those cases, we can instruct. But we would refrain from having sort of a blanket policy. Now, we have to balance this against what the EEOC has been telling us for years, which is in our policies and our practices and procedures, we should be advising complainants, for example, of sexual or racial harassment. We should be assuring them that when they make a complaint, we'll take every effort to maintain confidentiality, because obviously blabbing to the entire workforce that so-and-so made a complaint of sexual harassment is very intimidating for the individuals coming forward. So we need to balance these interests. And I think what we need to do is be careful that we're advising complainants that we will make every effort to keep material confidential to the extent possible. But obviously we can't guarantee that.
And I know that employers and management lawyers like us have raised with the federal agencies the tension between the EEOC confidentiality position and the labor board's view that in some circumstances, the blanket confidentiality instruction violates the National Labor Relations Act. And we really haven't gotten a satisfactory answer from either federal agency as to how to reconcile those. So employers have to do along the lines of what Tim mentioned, really what's best for you and your workplace.
And that's absolutely right. And you know, the EEOC did issue a report after that decision came out in which they specifically suggested that the EEOC and the NLRB would meet and convene and coordinate on that subject because they're in direct conflict with one another, as you said. And I don't believe that that has actually happened. Now that we have a full complement on the NLRB, you know, hopefully there's an opportunity to do that. I recently heard Bill Emanuel, one of the members of the National Labor Relations Board, speak, and he said that was an issue on the agenda generally was, you know, the NLRB hopefully taking a more proactive approach to sort of coordinating with other legal requirements on employers and not sort of operating in a vacuum and being willing to take a stand that is directly contrary to other positive law. So we're hoping to see that, but we haven't seen it yet.
So let's talk about the topic of written witness statements. And first of all, whether or not to have your employee interviewees sign off on written witness statements. And if so, best practice for doing that. So on the first question of whether to use written statements, well, the benefits are obvious that we can document and have the employee sign off on the information they provided us. And that really minimizes the extent to which an employee later can credibly disavow that or change the story in a material way. So there's really good advantages to having written statements. You should recognize, though, a couple of realities that might be downsides. One is that written statements would be subject to the requirement to produce them to somebody else. If you have a union at your workplace, it could be the case that the union can require you to disclose the written witness statements that you obtained in the investigation. Same thing with other government agencies who may be undertaking an investigation of the circumstances that you were investigating. And ultimately, if there's a lawsuit, and it's the fact that we may have to produce those written witness statements to a union or a government agency or a plaintiff's lawyer is not in and of itself a bad thing. It just means that you got to take great care in the creation of those statements so that there's not sloppy language or, you know, inadvertent admissions that didn't need to be made. On this topic of whether or not to use statements at all, Tim, any other thoughts?
Well, I think that's a great point is you want to make sure that, you know, one, that if you're understanding, you may have to disclose them, whether subject to a subpoena in litigation or, you know, a union information request, which our National Labor Relations Board, you know, for more than 30 years, it held that an actual witness statement need not be produced in response to a union information request just because of preserving the integrity of the investigation and preserving the willingness of employees to come forward and give a statement. Well, that law has changed, you know, as of a few years ago. And so, you know, we understand these are going to probably come to the light of day. So not only being aware of what's in the statement and making sure that it's as accurate and as narrowly tailored to the circumstances we want it to be, but also make sure we're not assuring employees that their statement will never become public or released to any other party.
So in terms of how best to create witness statements, the first thing I would say about that is you as the interviewer want to write it. I don't think it's effective to tell employees, please write up what you told me and give it to us because employees aren't necessarily skilled at written communication. And you know what are the important points in relation to the investigation, important because they confirm something that did happen or they suggest something that didn't happen from the eyes and ears of a person with personal knowledge. So you're the person that is best suited to write up the investigation statement. You should do it as soon after the interview as possible. You'll be subject to really the type of cross-examination or other question about the accuracy of the statement if you delay before you write it up.
And but in the context that you're talking about of the interviewer or counsel drafting that employee statement after the interview, based on what you've learned, then how do you circle back with the employee to get their confirmation that it's in fact an accurate depiction of their statement?
I think the interviewer should tell the employee, as you're wrapping up the first interview, I'm going to write up my notes and I'm going to have you come back to the office and review those for me for accuracy. And just let the employee know that that's going to happen. But again, then you're going to write them up as promptly as you can and carefully. Have the employee come back to your office. And again, in the privacy of that same type of setting that we talked about when we talked about how best to start an interview, give the employee the opportunity to sit there and read it. I don't think it makes sense to let the employee take it home and ruminate on the thing, because then people can get creative with it. But I would sit them down, give them the draft, tell them, I believe this accurately reflects what we talked about, but would you please read it carefully and feel free to make any changes that you want to make to it to be sure that it's 100% accurate. And if you make any change, go ahead and initial it. And then at the end of it, when you're done making changes or not, and you're comfortable that it's 100% accurate, please sign off on it. So it's probably also important that if you're going to use the witness statement procedure, that you do that with all the witnesses that you interview. Again, it's going to be, you're going to be attacked for your credibility if half of the witnesses you took a statement from and the other half you didn't. That'll be hard to justify and easy for a plaintiff's lawyer or a government investigator to attack. So it seems to me like if you're going to use witness statements, and they're typically a good idea, you should be prepared to do that for all of the witnesses that have any substantive information as part of your investigation that you may rely on.
And then probably on the back end, Bud, we'd want to advise an employee, particularly a supervisory or managerial employee, again, of any sort of attorney-client privilege protections that we're claiming. And how would you wrap that up at the end?
Yeah, just as you said, remind them to those management employees to keep the information confidential. Remind them it can be privileged information. And again, invite people to come right back if they sense that they're suffering or enduring any kind of backlash or retaliation. So if you follow those steps, you've wrapped up the employee interview really as effectively as I think an employer can, and set yourself up for success in your truth-seeking investigation. And with that, we'll wrap up this podcast. Thanks again, Tim, for joining me for this, and everybody who listened, we appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you
all. Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.